claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Progress.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm very pleased to feature again Danny Cirrus after I review some of the latest news developments. I'll bring in Danny, who's an expert in home security. I believe we've reached a point in American society where it's indispensable that homeowners be able to protect their homes, defend themselves from intruders, burglars, other miscreants who may want to do them harm. And because Danny's an expert in this area, I wanted to bring him back now in a timely fashion, especially as we approach Christmas, where I believe there's going to be a surge of home break-ins unlike any we've ever seen in the past, in part the effects of the coronavirus pandemic, because so many are out of work, they're in a state of semi-homelessness, they have no income, they're becoming increasingly desperate. There's another reason, too, why I wanted Danny back, because we have the latest school shooting at a high school. And Danny and I want to scrutinize to determine whether or not we're being played again. I believe, given the history of our experience with Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Parkland, Las Vegas, the default position for any of these purported shootings or other, you know, abominable acts has to be that they're probably fabrications. So we need to review whether the evidence substantiates that this was a bona fide event or not. Meanwhile, we have the European Union considering mandatory COVID jabs. This is absolutely stunning. Alex Jones has issued a very appropriate warning about it. The European Commission president says the EU states need to discuss the idea in response to the spread of the Omicron variant. There's something very odd about this Omicron variant. It only seems to have mild effects. They'd only reported one or two cases here and there when suddenly there was a full court press in the mainstream media about another one of these potential pandemics for which the evidence is either scant or non-existent. This woman is not an elected figure. Asked whether she supported the Greek government in its imposition of €100 monthly fine on those age 60 and over who failed to get a COVID jab. Von der Leyen said the spread of the disease and lack of vaccine take-up in parts of the EU meant mandatory vaccination had to be on the table as a policy response. They seem to have ignored altogether the Nuremberg Code, which is international law. Remember, all these vaccines remain experimental. They remain experimental, which has been useful, very beneficial to the pharmaceutical companies, because as long as they're experimental, they don't have to identify or specify their contents. As we have reported here again and again and again, the contents are horrifying. They include little weird parasites, multi-headed hydra. They appear to include graphene oxide. A host of other elements where Sherry Tenpenny, for example, has observed that these mRNA shots, and they're not technically vaccines, which implies that they're a form of medicine, which these are not. They could correctly be described as a form of gene therapy, but they're not medicine. In fact, they appear to have the effect of wiping out your immune system, which is part and parcel of the plan. By wiping out your immune system, you're going to be vulnerable to death from all sorts of hazards your body would have effortlessly shrugged off in the past. And that means, because they're going to be so diverse, it's going to be hard to identify the cause, which, however, is going to be a pandemic of death and devastation among the vaccinated. Have no doubt about it. So the question becomes, which European countries are being hit the hardest? We have a map here that those who have the opportunity to view the video will observe, but it's fascinating. One third of the European population is not vaccinated. Not each and everyone can be, children, for example, or people with special medical conditions, but the vast majority could. How we can encourage and potentially think about mandatory vaccination within the European Union needs discussion. We need a common approach. There is growing momentum behind mandatory vaccination among the EU member states, horror of horrors to contemplate, because this is governments forcing their citizens to take a jab that's going to do them immeasurable damage and with probability bring about their death. It's been reported Germany's Chancellor-to-be, Olaf Scholz, supports a policy. Neighboring Austria is debating how to enforce obligatory jabs. Austria turns out to be horrendous about this. Health policy remains a national competence. On Tuesday, Greece said it would make COVID vaccinations mandatory for those age 60 and older to protect its faltering health system. But it's going to have precisely the opposite effect, because those who are vaccinated have multi times many more chance or prospect, based upon statistical data, of becoming ill and imposing a burden upon the healthcare system. So vaccinating people isn't a way of unburdening the healthcare system. On the contrary, it's going to make it far worse. And I would simply observe, this is one of the parts of the genius of this diabolical plan. The devil himself, in my judgment, could not have done better. Von der Leyen said Pfizer and Moderna were set to deliver 360 million more doses by the end of March, ensuring there was sufficient supply for booster jabs. That is good news, so go get it, she said. The question becoming, does she know what she's talking about? Does she understand the hazard involved here? Where the leading virologist in the world has observed that everyone who gets a jab will be dead within 5 years. I personally hope that he's mistaken about that, because I have friends and relatives and neighbors who have taken the jab, and I most certainly do not want to lose them within a five-year period. But we have to face up to the grim reality that these vaccines are lethal weapons. that they were designed by genocidal globalists as a means of reducing the world's population by billions. Mark my word, billions. What's going on here with a jab is going to bring about the greatest mass murder in history. I guarantee it will never have an equal. This will set the gold standard for depopulation by means of a deliberate program. Van der Leyden said the world's in a race against time, that the onus has to be on getting jabs into arms now. Scientists tell us we have to do everything possible to make the best out of the time we have until we're certain about the characteristics and transmissibility and the severity of Omicron. Prepare for the worst, hope for the best. Omicron, of course, turns out to be an anagram of the word moronic, and I believe we are being played for morons, completely played for morons. It's embarrassingly bad. We have Boris Johnson, or the Greek prime minister, actually saying compulsory vaccination has already been approved by the Council on Trade, which is the nation's highest administrative court. This is a dreadful development. Greece is the first EU member to target a specific age group, acknowledging the decision had personally tormented him as a profoundly liberal politician struggling with the concept of obligation. But he thinks he's protecting the people when he's actually inflicting upon them a death, an effect they do not want. Meanwhile, Biden, right here at home, continues his insanity. He wants to extend the mask mandate on planes, stuff and testing for travelers amid the Omicron jitters. The Biden administration is ramping up restrictions for travelers to and within the U.S., requiring more stringent testing protocols and extending the existing mask mandate on domestic flights and public transportation to fight COVID-19 variants over the cold winter month. Now, mind you, the globalists are really concerned to get everyone jabbed so it won't become obvious even already this winter, and we're entering into that season, that those who are dropping dead left and right are the vaccinated, and that the unvaccinated have only a normal death rate independent of the virus based upon past experience. So they want to ensure we don't have a control group that's going to make it obvious to everyone exactly what's going on. Hence their frantic effort to get everyone vaxxed. I have in my lifetime never seen anything remotely approaching the full court press. Every television program from the mainstream begins with a massive onslaught about COVID and the massive threat, in spite of the fact that if you look at those who have survived COVID across nations, it's over 99% survival rate, over 99% survival rate. So this is simply absurd what they're doing. Those who are not going to have a 99% survival rate are those who are vaccinated. Travelers, according to Biden, will have to continue wearing masks through March 18th on planes, trains, and other modes of public transportation, as well as hubs like indoor bus stations and airports. That requirement was due to expire on January 18th, where those who fail to comply face a minimum fine of $500 and up to $3,000 for repeat offenses. I frankly doubt any of this is constitutional. This is simply outrageous and an abuse. Biden says his primary obligation is to make us safe, but that's false. His obligation as president is support and defend the Constitution and ensure that everything that happens in the U.S. are to the best of his ability in accordance with the Constitution. What he's doing is precisely the opposite. Indeed, even though major courts of appeal have now ruled these mandates are wrong, not just for certain regions, but across the United States, Biden and his administration is proceeding as though those courts did not even exist. In other words, he's pursuing a lawless agenda where the executive branch usurps the role of the legislative by creating, as it were, laws that they have no authority to create. OSHA has seemed to be more responsive, incidentally, by calling back its efforts to impose a mandate. The White House continues to say, we have the public health tools we need to continue to fight this virus without shutting down our schools and businesses, where today's actions will ensure we're using them as effectively as possible to protect the American people. But he's doing nothing of the sort. Indeed, the CDC has admitted it has no record of an unvaccinated person spreading COVID after recovering from COVID, as have I. A New York attorney filed a FOIA request in September asking documents reflecting any documented case of an individual who, one, never received a COVID vaccine, two, was infected with COVID once recovered, then later became infected, and three, transmitted SARS to another person when reinfected. I don't know about that becoming reinfected, because once you've survived, you have natural immunity. So this is somewhat of an unusual category. The CDC replied, a search of our records failed to reveal any documents pertaining to your request. The CDC Emergency Operations Center conveyed that this information is not collected. That's pretty bad, that it has no record of an unvaccinated person spreading COVID after recovering from COVID. Lawyers smell blood in the water. Meanwhile, a study examining T-cell responses in COVID convalescent individuals published earlier this year reveals natural immunity provides better protection against the virus than vaccination. Senator Rand Paul, Dr. Fauci, great news. T-cell immunity after natural infection showed to include variants. Do we still need to wear multiple masks after we've recovered or been vaccinated? Natural immunity, however, doesn't make big pharma any money, which is why the Biden regime and the CDC never talk about it. Remember, the protected need to be protected from the unprotected by forcing the unprotected to use the protection that didn't protect the protected. This is the absurd situation we're in today. Moreover, and this is interesting, perhaps promising, the World Health Organization says no evidence booster jabs would offer greater protection to the healthy, challenging the UK decision to offer third jabs to the entire population. I like this. The World Health Organization has questioned the UK decision to roll out hundreds of millions of booster jabs to protect its population, asserting there is no evidence they would offer greater protection to the healthy. UK Health Secretary Sajid Javid says the country has secured an additional 114 million vaccine doses for 2022 and 2023 to buy time, and that everyone over the age of 18 will be offered one by the end of January. Dr. Mike Ryan, head of the WHO's emergency program, questioned the logic. Right now, there's no evidence I'm aware of would suggest boosting the entire population would necessarily provide any greater protection for otherwise healthy individuals against hospitalization and death. Nice. Ryan also noted UK was in a luxurious position of being able to offer booster shots to its entire population, given that many poor countries don't even have vaccines to give all their people a single dose. UK medical authorities have also seized upon the Omicron variant to insist more children receive vaccines. This is odd, given the variant has become noted for only causing mild symptoms in younger populations. Experts argue that dismissing Omicron as mild is dangerous because South Africa is a very young population, average age 27, and we don't know how it will impact older people. Then they say the solution is to vaccinate more younger people when they don't know how it will impact older people. Makes total sense. You know, as we're being confronted with one massive stream of bullshit after another. Meanwhile, pollster to Democrat candidates in 2022, we have a problem, could lose a ton of races. A Democrat pollster tasked with performing an autopsy of voting trends following an election massacre endured by the party in Virginia has said he would tell 2022 midterm candidates, we have a problem. Republicans swept statewide offices in the Old Dominion just last month. The results led Third Way, a centrist group, to seek out pollster Brian Stryker, a Democrat, who discovered numerous issues with the party's messaging and branding. Stryker reportedly issued a memo on the focus group results, which concentrated on voters who went with Biden 2020, but flipped to Republican Youngkin just a year later in Virginia. Joe Scarborough even has acknowledged the number one issue for women right now is the economy, and the number one issue for Black voters is the economy, and the number one issue for Latino voters is the economy. A pollster is warning to Democrats, we have a problem. Focus groups with Virginia voters led to a bluntly worded memo on what Democrats need to do going into the midterms. Stryker, in an interview with the New York Times, said voters found Democrats were too focused on social issues, not enough on the economy, laughed at attempts to draw former President Trump into the race, and that the party's problems are probably deeper than a lot of people suspect. When asked by the paper what he would tell a Democrat running in 2022, he was rather blunt. The latest data combined with the Virginia election results seem to join with the Democrat pollster's assertion that the party is in serious trouble if they don't turn things around before the 2022 midterms. I would tell them that we have a problem, he said. Stryker proceeded to address Democrat Terry McAuliffe, who lost to Youngkin, and his assistance on linking the Republican candidate to President Trump. He suggested that tactic may have been the best McAuliffe had to offer, which isn't saying much about its campaign, but it didn't strike a chord with the voters because while they may dislike Trump personally, they do not dislike his policies. Stryker added that future candidates being compelled to run against a weak link to Trump will suffer the same fate. If we're in that position again, we're going to lose a ton of races, he said. We've got to have something better. Thus, Live Monitor tweets, Democrat strategist who advises major donors said, too late, we're effed. I've tweeted since day one that Biden's cabinet and policies being shoved down the throat of voters will have significant consequences for Democrats. It's too late to salvage 2022. Politico also noted that presidential approval ratings are a measure closely tied to a party's performance in the midterms. A poll conducted in late November by the Trafalgar Group and Convention of States shows President Biden's approval rating has dropped to 36.3%. Biden approval continues to drop. Democrats, independents, 29.3%. Democrats, 65.0%. GOP, 8.2%. 36.3% approve, 59.1% disapprove, 4.6% no opinion. That's overall. That is simply devastating. Meanwhile, Mike Adams has put out a real clear, blunt message. How they plan to kill billions with the common flu, COVID vaccine-induced AIDS. Those who took the COVID jabs have been turned into vaccine-induced AIDS patients with collapsing immunity against everything. And that makes them highly vulnerable to a deliberate release of a moderate flu strain that would normally kill only the frail and the elderly. Why did globalists choose this route? Because they didn't want to nuke the planet with a truly vicious pathogen that would threaten their own children in the long run. They want to keep the really dangerous pathogens in the freezer while figuring out how to kill people with mild pathogens. Only by convincing the gullible masses to line up for mRNA spike protein injections could they pull this off. Meanwhile, we have MSNBC Joy Reid saying conservatives who defy the vaccine and mask mandates belong to a death cult. How many more people have to die before these ghouls are satisfied? This may be the single most repulsive figure on television today. MSNBC's Joy Reid says the faction of the right defying COVID are part of a death cult. The readout host said, Fox Nation host Laura Logan, who recently compared Dr. Anthony Fauci to Nazi Dr. Joseph Mengele, might very well be one of those in a death cult leading some of the right down a path of destruction. Logan said Monday that concern over COVID Micron variant is over the top. What is happening over time is that the entire response to COVID and everything we were told about it from the beginning is being exposed and it's falling apart. The lies are coming apart. Really now, there is no justification for putting people out of their jobs or forcing vaccine mandates for a disease that ultimately is very treatable. She continued, what you see on Dr. Fauci, this is what people say to me, that he doesn't represent science to them. He represents Joseph Mengele, the Nazi doctor who did experiments on Jews during the Second World War and in the concentration camps, which, by the way, led to the passing of the Nuremberg Code that precludes the application of any experimental medical procedure without informed consent. Reed, referring to Logan, who said she said is a right-wing troll, began her show, we begin the readout with a deplorable form of Republican gaslighting comparing gas mandates to the Holocaust. Again, last night, it reached a new low when former respectable journalist and current right-wing troll Laura Logan went on Trump TV to say this about Dr. Anthony Fauci, to whom I refer as Tony the Rat. She then played the clip of Logan's remarks and immediately condemned him for the comparison, her for the comparison. To show how ludicrous, but also how offensive that is, let me talk about who Joseph Mengele really was. Known as the Angel of Death, he presided over deadly and inhumane medical experiments on Jewish prisoners while serving as a physician at Auschwitz. He's described as the embodiment of absolute evil, a doctor assigned to select who would die and who would live, only be subject to the ghoulish human experiments he saw over. And that, I think, is a perfect explanation or description of Anthony Fauci.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? and that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, as advertised, I'm very pleased to have a return engagement with Danny Siras, where we're going to take a look at the official account of what happened in this latest shooting and attempt to ascertain whether or not it was real. I'll give some reports of what we're being told. Bullied suspect Ethan Crumbly, 15, allegedly used dad's pistol in school shooting. The Michigan high school shooting suspect is a bullied 15-year-old sophomore who now faces multiple first-degree murder and terrorism charges. Ethan Crumbly is charged with killing 4 students, injuring 7 others, when he allegedly opened fire at Oxford High School, about 40 miles north of Detroit. Wednesday, after the Tuesday shooting, officials at Oakland County Sheriff's Office said he shot a video the night before talking about killing students, made similar threats in a journal found in his backpack, awaiting arraignment. His father published a 9mm Sig Sauer handgun used in the shooting just 4 days earlier on Black Friday. Oakland prosecutor Karen McDonald said her office is considering charges against both parents. She said Crumbly had been charged as an adult with murder, terrorism, assault, and weapons possession. Crumbly had posted photos of the gun, him firing it, in the lead-up to the school shootings, the sheriff added. Investigators are still trying to determine a motive because the suspect isn't speaking. Some classmates, however, have said Crumbly was bullied. Investigators say Crumbly's parents, James and Jennifer, advised their son not to speak to authorities following his arrest. Police must get permission from a juvenile's parents or guardian to speak with them. Police raided the family home about 2 miles from the school and seized several long guns. The outlet said the teen's father works for an office software supply company, Autonomous Incorporated. We have a photograph reportedly of Ethan Crumbly with his father. We have another photograph of Ethan holding the Sig Sauer handgun. Ethan Crumbly, just got my new beauty today, Sig Sauer 9mm. Ask any questions, I will answer. Meanwhile, investigators are doing a deep dive on his social media to try to determine a motive or see if there were any red flags. He was featured in the local Oxford Leader newspaper back in 2017, when he spoke of an elementary school group project on poverty and hunger. I see people on the street sometime who are homeless and hungry, and I feel I should take action and help them, Ethan purportedly said. Authorities said, reported they were made aware of social media posts saying there had been threats of a shooting at Oxford. Police said they didn't know of the rumors until after the attack. Here we have a photograph of the school where it's located. Looks an awful lot like a new high school we have over here in Verona, Wisconsin, not far from where I reside in Oregon. The sheriff said Crumbly had no previous run-ins with his department, wasn't aware of any disciplinary history at the school. And yet, we do have a report that allegedly the parents were there early in the day for his having conduct issues in the classroom. Authorities swarmed the family home hours after the shooting, spotted hauling away evidence, what appeared to be long guns. Crumbly was taken into custody in the school hallway just minutes after deputies arrived around lunchtime, put his hands up, adding his gun was found to have 7 additional rounds in it. Meanwhile, 3 of the students who were killed were identified as 16-year-old Tate Meyer, 14-year-old Hannah St. Juliana, and 17-year-old Madison Baldwin, a 14. Justin Sterling, 17, died of his wounds Wednesday. Meyer died in a patrol car as a deputy tried to get him to an emergency room. 7 other students, ranging from 14 to 70, were hospitalized with gunshot wounds, including several who were in critical condition. A 14-year-old girl was placed on a ventilator after surgery. A teacher who received a graze wound to the shoulder left the hospital Tuesday after being treated. Danny has been resourceful in obtaining a photograph of the home. Danny, I want you to give us your appraisal of what's going on here and what you've been able to ascertain as to whether this story is on the up and up.
Hello, sir. Good to be with you today. Quite a story, isn't it?
Yeah, please do fill us in, Danny, on what you've been able to discover in your own investigation thereof.
Well, this one is a little tough, sir. One of the reasons is he's a minor, so there's not a lot of records on him. As a matter of fact, to start off right off the bat, what I did is I looked into the parents, and I looked into their background. They do come up. They are listed as real people. As you know, a lot of times when we look into these shootings where, you know, we look at the suspect. The suspect actually does not exist, was not born, has no records, that sort of thing. This particular time, I did find what appears to be his parents and their home address. And in checking out their neighborhood, I was able to snatch a photo of their home. You can see it there as you're displaying it. It's pretty interesting. It's a small, tiny home. It's just a little over, 1,000 square feet. It appears to be listed as a 3-bedroom, 1-bath home, and it's obscured from the public. It's very interesting. You can see all those trees and overgrowth over it with the driveway down the side. You can't see anything. I thought it was really strange because it's the smallest home on the block by far. All the other homes on the block seem to be quite stately, and look really nice. It's a tree-lined street. It's actually a really nice looking neighborhood, except for this one particular house with all this overgrown brush, and you can't see the home, or what's going on there. But there's a lot of anomalies that I'm seeing in this so far, sir, that just don't add up. That's for sure.
Please do elaborate, Danny. Now, am I right? Is there a sidewalk there? I can't quite tell as it goes to the left whether it continues there. Is there a sidewalk or is it no sidewalk?
It looks like there's a sidewalk there next to the telephone pole. It's kind of covered with grass and leaves.
Yeah.
And whatnot. But I did a little search of the neighborhood. Like I said, it's quite a nice neighborhood. It looks pretty like a middle-class neighborhood. The homes look a little bit older, but, they're quite nice. Everybody keeps their home up pretty nice. Again, this is the only house on the block that appears to be overgrown like this with these trees obscuring the home, so I can't really see it. But it is listed as quite a small home compared to all the other homes on the street. I just thought that was kind of interesting. But there's nothing really other to tell, except for when I looked up the parents, sir, they do have an interesting record. They both have DUIs. So that suggests a few of them. So it suggests that they have an alcohol problem in the house. Not only was the mom arrested in the past for an alcohol problem, but so was the father. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The one thing that did trouble me, though, in looking through, they don't appear to have any children. I don't see any birth records, and that was quite troubling. I should have seen, or most of the time I will see, when I look up the woman, I can see if she has children, when they were born, and so on and so forth. And I don't see any records of Ethan whatsoever. So that kind of struck me as a little bit strange. I don't have the ability to do so, but I would love to go to that neighborhood and talk to some of the neighbors and show a picture of the kid and ask a few of the neighbors, you know, what's going on with him? What kind of child was him? Do you know him? I think that would be very interesting to see what kind of answers we would get if we could canvass that neighborhood and talk to some of the neighbors. The other thing I noticed right away is both parents had their Facebook pages shut down and suspended. And I find that a little bit suspicious too. And I noticed with these shootings, they seem to be doing that now because they don't want us to go in there and look around or see any sort of history. And their pages all seem to be shut down. I noticed both of them have some college degrees, which was really interesting. The father has a bachelor's degree in business administration, and the wife has actually a two-year degree. She's a realtor, it looks like, and the father works like in a business kind of a thing. But they reported a company that he worked for, and when I looked it up, that's not the company he does work for. So the news reports got some details about their backgrounds wrong. And I see that sometimes in the news. They don't always report accurately in these sort of things. But I notice when it becomes a false flag, of course, that they're completely inaccurate because the person is fictitious. But this time, they both exist. I mean, they are there. I couldn't find any pictures anywhere of either one of them, which I thought was very interesting. I did find one of the wife, though, on a very obscure way, one little photograph. But other than that, all their Facebook was shut down. They both have job profiles as well on a few of the job type of websites, but there's no photographs, which I thought was really interesting about them. So they seem to be just middle-class people, They also have some judgments. So in other words, they've been sued. They had a couple of rather large judgments, but I thought was very interesting. It suggests that they have some debt. There's some alcohol issues in their life. Both of them having DUIs, which I thought was very, very interesting and looking at their background. But I'd say, the most I could get, I couldn't find anything on Ethan whatsoever. I mean, their Facebooks were shut down. I couldn't see any birth records whatsoever. So I'm quite troubled about that part of what I could find out so far.
Danny, that's all very disturbing. I mean, yes, with this tiny house and the financial debt, these would be lower middle class in terms of socioeconomic status. And the fact they shut off the Facebook pages is, in my opinion, very telling. They don't want to allow independent souls, just curious Americans, or those of us who are seeking to verify whether or not this is a legitimate story, to have access to information that would better enable us to do that. That already by itself suggests to me this is probably a fraudulent story. And the fact that you can't even find records that they actually have a son by the name of Ethan is further compounding the problem. Obviously, if they have no son Ethan, then their son Ethan did not shoot up the Oxford High School. And I find all that very telling, very disturbing. Also, from the various photographs I've seen, Danny, I don't see any that are, actually show us bona fide victims. It's typical of Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, Orlando, for example, that you have no surge of EMTs into the building, no real ambulance are called. In fact, there's a policy against using real ambulances for staged events because that makes them unavailable for bona fide medical emergencies. So I'm finding all this in terms of the circumstantial elements you're piecing together here highly suspicious, as I would already suggest the probability is greater that this is a fake staged event than that it's real. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%, sir. You know, the hair on my neck is starting to stand up here. And again, I would love to go to this neighborhood and canvass the place and talk to some neighbors to verify whether this couple that lived in this home even had a son. And if he looked like that or whatever, it wouldn't be hard for any investigator to go there and crack this. You know, some other things that stand out to me, sir, is some of the supporting stories. Like I sent you an article today that the AP posted where they say both parents are now charged with manslaughter. And I find that very interesting because usually, for one, I don't see that being the appropriate charge, but you can't really hold them to manslaughter over this. That doesn't make any sense, for one. Two, why would it be both parents? How can you prove both parents are negligent in this when most likely it was the father who owned, purchased the firearms and not the mom? You can't just sue to kind of hold the mom because she happened to live there, you know, and that she was somehow responsible for locking up or handling these firearms. So I thought, you know, charging both of them, that's just kind of a, you know, red flag to me. You know, how much investigation have they really done?
Yeah.
The other thing on the report that they said was that they went to the house and they raided the house. Well, I thought that was really interesting when they say raided the home. I mean, they simply could just knock on the door and go talk to him. You know, no raid necessary. That suggests that they got a warrant to search the home. And then set their reporting that several long guns were removed. Well, a question I would have is several long guns were removed. That suggests to me that the guy might have been a responsible gun owner and had a safe. You know, I don't know anybody, sir, that, you know, has guns, that has several guns, that does not have a safe. As a matter of fact, I actually don't even know anybody that does not have some kind of a lockable safe, or at least a gun closet of some sort to lock up their weapons, especially when they're not home. They just don't simply stack up several long guns behind their door in their bedroom or whatever. That just most people are worried about their guns. They're worried about people breaking in and taking them, and they have some kind of safe. You know, safes don't cost that much money. You know, you can definitely spend an array of money depending on, you know, where you want to go with a safe, but literally you can buy one for a few hundred dollars to lock up a handgun, or even less. I mean, for 50 or 60 bucks, you can buy a small handgun safe that'll lock down your handgun pretty well. But as far as having several long guns, to me, that suggests he had a little bit of a collection of weapons. You know, they're worth money, and people tend to lock up their guns, their rifles. They don't want anything to happen to them. So that part of the story doesn't make any sense that, you know, he had these long guns, right? But yet he had the newest addition, they're telling us, which was the Sig Sauer semi-automatic pistol, and it wasn't locked up. And for some reason, his son was able to get access to it and take it to school. And I'm just not buying that whatsoever, sir. It makes no sense to me at all.
Two or three additional comments based on your observations, Danny. Overcharging the parents both with manslaughter? I mean, that would seem to imply they were causally responsible in a far more direct than indirect fashion than having the weapon available where the son could access. I mean, there's got to be another charge here, which would be something like having an insecure handgun. You can fill me in on that. More tellingly to me is the timing. The Democrats have suffered three massive blows between Kenosha, where Kyle Rittenhouse was exonerated by, in self-defense, using an AR-15 to kill two men who were threatening him with his life and to wound a third who was actually pointing a handgun at him. That was a severe blow to their attempt to demonize the AR-15. Waukesha was a severe blow to the idea that blacks are always the victims and that white supremacists are always the culprits, mowing down all these white, you know, civilians participating in a Christmas parade. That is horrific. Such that Joe Biden, he's going to Minnesota, but he's finessing a visit to Waukesha. If this man actually cared about the country and unity, he'd be coming to Waukesha en route to Minnesota. This is very offensive, in my opinion. And then, of course, we have the Aubrey trial outcome, where three whites, rather stereotypical rednecks, are found guilty of murdering a black man. That also contradicts a Democrat narrative. I think they desperately want to change the subject. And therefore, this event seems to me, Danny, to be a placeholder. They plugged it in. I think it's falling apart already based upon what you're reporting. It doesn't appear they had a son. And I would say there's other reason to question whether a real shooting took place. But the idea of overcharging, see, that's just exactly what they want to do if this is a psyop. They want to create the impression, oh, my God, parents, you're running the risk of being prosecuted if you have guns that your children might somehow access. Your thoughts, Danny?
Well, sir, as usual, I agree with you. I mean, you know, the overcharging, we covered that Aubrey case, which is a joke. They completely overcharged the three people. They charged two of them with a crime just for standing there in the wrong place at the wrong time. They didn't have the gun. They didn't have possession of the gun. It wasn't their gun. They just happened to be standing there for some reason, for standing there when one person took action with a rifle, they got charged with murder. And that absolutely makes no sense. There's no jury that's going to convict somebody for standing there, when they're not in, they had nothing to do with the gun or the weapon. They had no control of that other guy's actions whatsoever. And just because their neighbor did what he did, now they get charged with the same crime because they happen to be standing there. It's just, when you really think about it, sir, taking a page out of your book, using some critical thinking skills, I mean, it's completely ridiculous. And to me, that, they cut the video off, as we showed on our last show. During the struggle, they don't let us see anything. I don't believe it at all. None of this stuff makes sense whatsoever. The fact that they expected him to hand over the rifle or the shotgun to the criminal once the fight's on and the criminal's trying to take your weapon, and the fact that you fight to maintain possession of your weapon and you win the fight, because, anybody trying to steal your gun obviously is going to use it against you. And now they're going down for murder, including the people that happen to be standing there watching this thing, is absolutely ridiculous. This shooting, though, with this kid really bothers me, sir, because they're using minors. And minors are very hard to look up their records. They're minors. They don't have a lot of records. You have to get into the school and the school records, which is very difficult to do. There's a lot of problems going on with this. Again, hit with the guns, no safe. They're charging the parents with a crime. What if the son would have taken the keys to, one of their cars took a car and ran over some kid in the neighborhood? Are they going to charge him because the son took the keys to the car and took the parents' car and ran somebody over with it? I would say no, they're not going to do that. And the fact that, this kid somehow bought that particular handgun to school, I just don't see it, sir. I don't believe it. He's 15, looking in the photos. I don't think the whole thing is real, by the way. But I think they're staged photos. I don't know who that kid is. It's very difficult to try and find him out of the blue with no names to go by. But I just don't think the whole thing fits. I don't see him even. He looks like a scrawny kid. The action on that particular handgun that they're showing has a really stiff action on it. It's kind of a heavy gun. And I just don't see the kid packing something like this to school, you know, and running it the way that when you read the story that he did, you know, the people that he hit and so on, the fact that he had 7 rounds left over and he didn't empty the gun completely. I just don't believe the whole story the way that they're trying to tell us that it happened. It just doesn't make any sense. There's no motive for this whatsoever. He's never been in trouble with the police before. But, you know, the police came out and said there's no record of him ever having any trouble. And so for some reason, all of a sudden, this kid decides that he's going to grab his dad's gun and go to school and shoot some innocent kids. You know, kids have been bullied for years. That's just something that happens to a lot of kids in school. And they don't all, you know, conspire to go home and get one of their father's guns and bring it to school and shoot up students over it. And the story just doesn't fit, sir. There's not enough evidence yet, and it's very difficult to grab. But what we have so far with the parents, you know, it's very troubling that I can't look up anything with these parents as far as photographs or whatever, and they shut off their Facebook and their social media. We can't see anything, and they just don't want us to see what's going on, and we have nothing on this kid. And that's very troubling. I can't find a Facebook for him. I can't find any social media. I don't find any of the stuff that they're talking about.
Yeah, so
it's
well,
a very difficult case.
Let me encourage our listeners, if they can do any research on this case and want to comment during the call-in period, after the next segment when Danny will be talking about home security and protection, please do so. I think that in the tentative and fallible fashion of science, we're subject to revising our opinion if we encounter new evidence or alternative explanations. This looks like another hoax, a false flag. No evidence that he's actually born to these children. No actual proof the event had taken place. The attempt to cover it up. The fact that they are blanking out Facebook and other sources, very telling that the Democrats need to change the agenda, the conversation from Waukesha especially, but also the Aubrey case and Kenosha. All these suggest to me there's a powerful motive for faking a stunt to here. Just change the conversation. Talking about the number of rounds left also hints to me they're going to talk about having magazines of more than a few rounds, which are trying to restrict as well to take away our access to weapons under the Second Amendment. We'll be right back with Danny Cirrus after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting "This is a drill, this is a drill" on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet?
I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Among Danny Sirrah's areas of expertise is home security, and given we're entering a holiday season where I predict, for good reason, that home break-ins and burglaries are going to increase dramatically for reasons I've already sketched, I wanted Danny to have this opportunity to share with you some of his tips, advice he has for making your home secure, that you not be vulnerable to some unwanted intrusion and the theft of your property, or worse. Danny, yours.
Well, thank you, sir. You know, this is a subject that I'm pretty passionate about because, you know, most break-ins in a home can be prevented. A lot of car break-ins, you know, those are tough. You don't want to, as far as your car, you don't want to have any valuables or anything in your car. Try to lock them in the trunk or in the back. You don't ever want to leave anything in visible sight, obviously, to give a criminal a reason to break your glass and steal anything. You know, that alone, if you're diligent about that, can prevent a lot of car break-ins, you know, alone. But in a home, things change quite a bit. So what I'd like to talk about is, you know, how to secure your home and some things that you can do. Okay, so starting off, you know, home security is kind of done in layers, you know, and it has to do with budget. And I'm sorry to inform everybody, but security does cost a little money. You have to spend a little money on some devices and some equipment, but you know what? Your return on investment is that you and your family, your pets are going to be safe, your belongings are going to be safe. And of course, the goal is not just to buy a firearm and say that's your home security. You don't want that. Depending on where you live in this country, as we talked about before, there's some overzealous Democrat district attorneys that shouldn't be in place that are, you know, prosecuting homeowners for, you know, shooting criminals. So the key with home security is to make your home And so when a criminal comes and cases out your home or approaches your home, he sees certain items in place that he just says, you know what, this home isn't worth it. And they think twice and they just go on to another home. And that's the goal. That's the goal. You want to have layers in place so they'll completely skip your home. So anyway, I'd like to go over some devices and some things you can do to secure your home and to kind of start the ball off. So to start off with home security, you have what's called two perimeters. You have what's called your outer perimeter, which is, you know, on a single family home, that would be all the property, your front yard up to the sidewalk and your backyard fence. And then you have your inner perimeter, which is all the walls in your house, your front door, your rear door, and your windows and stuff. And you have your dwelling that you actually live in. So let's start off with, your dwelling or your home, or even in your apartment, if you live in an apartment or a condo or something like that. You know, 80 to 85% of the break-ins, sir, people come through the front door. They break in the front door. It's amazing how many people, they live in an older home, and they get nostalgia. And they want to fix up their old front door or whatever, often if it's an old thin wood door, and they're quite flimsy. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people where they actually had a hollow core front door, and you could just about push your hand through it if you tried hard enough, or smash through it with a rock. So, you know, you want to evaluate your front door. I always suggest to people to get a strong steel front door over a wood door. I know everybody likes a beautifully trimmed wood door. I'm one myself. I like them. But for security, depending on where you live, you know what? It's better to have a steel door because they're much stronger, they're more secure, and they're harder to kick. They're harder to kick in. So again, keep in mind, if you can secure your front door, you can prevent a lot of break-ins right there. 80 to 85% of the break-ins, the criminals come through the front door. So let's kind of focus on that, sir. So take a look at your front door, and you want to see what it's made out of, if it's wood, if it's metal, or whatever. And I want to talk about how you can harden and secure your front door. There's a product out there that's called Easy Armor, and it's by Armor Concepts. And what it is, it's some steel brackets that screw down over the top of your hinges and with long 3.5-4-inch screws. So you have to, pre-drill to drive these screws because they're going to be going into the studs in the wall. And of course, after years and years, the Douglas fir in your home gets so hard, you cannot drive a screw into it. You have to pre-drill a pilot hole. You want to wax or put some kind of a silicone spray on the screws when you drive them to make them drive smooth. That way you don't, have a lot of frustration when you go to install and you break the screws or you strip them, which is a common problem when people try to install this stuff themselves. But there's brackets that go over the hinges. With long screws that make it impossible for those hinges to break out. They become part of the studs in the wall. And then the system also comes with a long strike bracket that runs on the other side where the lock is. It's about 2.5-3 foot long, and it's got long screws that go all the way through the jam into the studs after you get it installed. And it basically makes that strike plate part of the entire wall. It's a big steel bracket. And it actually looks pretty nice. This stuff doesn't look ugly or whatever. It's thin, but it's very, very strong. There's a couple of brackets that will go over your lock as well. And when you install this Easy Armor, there's video online. So just simply go to YouTube, type in Easy Armor, Armor Concepts. You'll see people installing this particular device. You'll see actual security or police trying to break in a door with a battering ram with this installed on it, and you'll actually notice the battering ram breaks. They beat the door pretty good. Of course, they dent it up, but they can never get in. And I'll tell you, when you install Easy Armor in your door, sir, you're pretty much going to have to get a cutting tool to get through the door. They're not going to break it in. Most criminals are going to give it a couple of kicks. They're going to feel how solid it is, and they're going to move on. Simple as that. That's the way it goes. So that's just part of what you can do to your front door. Also, I would encourage people to put on there a really good lock. And my favorite lock out there right now, sir, that I use, the home store locks, I'd like to point out, aren't very good. You go to Home Depot, Lowe's, some of the, whatever, the hardware, local hardware store, some of the brands, they're not very good. Criminals keep this thing in their pocket, often called a bump key. It's a key that has sharp teeth they file in there, and they simply will put it in some older locks They'll give it a bump with a hairbrush or a rock or whatever. And when they give it that motion and they bump that key when it's in the lock at the same time, it jars the pins and they turn at the same time. And they can open the lock just the same as the person that actually has the key. A lot of people don't even understand this concept. They don't even know what a bump key is. You can go on YouTube and type in bump key. Very simple. Go back and listen to this over and over again. Type in bump key, and you can see how the criminals can open any lock in seconds. So you want to get a modern-day lock, especially your deadbolt. I like a particular deadbolt out of Canada. It's called a Bowley, B-O-W-L-E-Y, Bowley lock. It was invented by a young engineering student called Ryan Bowley. That's his name. I've actually talked to him several times. And Ryan, when he was in college, he's an engineering student. He completely reinvented the lock. The tumblers are on the top, not in the bottom. It's a completely different kind of design. The key is a really crazy looking key. And the way the lock works is completely different. You have to put the key in, turn it 180 degrees. Then the key goes all the way in. Then it'll actuate the lock. It's quite brilliant. It's almost impossible to pick. When a criminal looks at that lock, he's going to see he's never seen anything like it. And chances are he's just going to give up. It has a hardened pin inside of it, and there's no way anybody can get in there and cut it. And it's not that expensive either. It's probably around the same price as any other lock, maybe a few dollars more. But you know what? It's totally worth the money. I mean, I use them. I've installed them for friends and family. And, you know, it's peace of mind. You put a lock like that on your door, they're not going to bump key it open. They're not going to – you add it with the Easy Armor. There's no way. They're not kicking that door. You just basically turned your front door into a fortress, okay? And then there's two other devices for your front door that I'm pretty passionate about that don't cost any money. And they're called night locks, okay? You might want to write that down, night locks. And you have what's called an upper night lock and a lower night lock. And there's one called a Defender. It's very inexpensive. It's less than, I don't know, $20-$25. You can buy them online. Just search around. And it goes on like it's a latch lock. It goes up on the top of your door. You want to place it probably within 4 to 6 inches of the top of your door. And it flips over and just kind of and locks into itself by hand. But it puts an extra 600 to 800 pounds on the top of the door. When you go to put this in, it has really long 3.5-4-inch screws. Again, if you're not a handyman, I would encourage you to hire a carpenter or some sort of a handyman to install this, because the screws are so long, once you get it positioned, and it has to be in the right position to work properly, you have to drive rather large screws through the jamb into the studs of your home, and those studs are extremely hard. Again, I'm going to say it again, Douglas fir gets really incredibly hard when it gets older. That's the wood that most homes are framed out of. And it gets so hard that the only way you're going to drive a screw is it has to be pre-drilled with a pilot hole. And a lot of times you might want to put some wax or something, some lubricant on the screw, so it drives nice and smooth and you don't have any problems. So the upper lock, look at the Defender. Again, inexpensive, puts an extra 600 pounds on the door on the top, makes it impossible. And then the other one I really like, it goes on the bottom and it's just called a night lock. And what it is, it's an aluminum plate that you screw into the concrete. If you have a concrete floor, you screw it down onto the floor, goes on your front door, and it has a little groove in it. And it comes with a like kind of big aluminum angled plate. And basically at nighttime, what you do is you just slide this device right in into the groove there. And that alone puts another 2,500 to 3,000 pounds on the bottom of the door. So when you put those devices in along with the Easy Armor, I mean, you basically turned your front door into a fortress, and they'd have to drive a vehicle through it, and even that would be difficult. I'd say the only way anybody's getting into a front door that has this on it, especially if it's a metal door, is if they cut the door, sir, and that's the end of it. Again, you've eliminated, when you do this, you've eliminated 80 to 85% of the break-ins, on your front door. And that's extremely, extremely important. I don't know, sir, do you have any questions about what I'm talking about so far?
Only the spelling of, the night lock. Is it N-I-T-E or N-I-G-H-T?
It's N-I-G-H-T.
Okay, lock. Good, good.
And you have an upper I use the Defender, and the lower lock is just called a night lock. And you'll see it. They're just flip latches, the one on the floor. I'd like to point out, putting the one on the floor, if you have a concrete floor, some people just say, oh, that's too difficult. Well, it's not too difficult. I mean, you just have to pilot drill the holes into the concrete in your floor. It's not that hard. You need a hammer drill, just the way it is. You're not going to take your little tiny cordless drill, and you're not going to be able to drill these holes into the concrete. You have to drill a 3/8-inch hole that usually is the size to put the anchors down into the floor, and you just can't do it. So it's really simple. You go down to your local rental yard, you can rent a hammer drill. It's only going to cost you maybe 15, 20 bucks. Doesn't cost that much. And a hammer drill will go right through in your concrete, no problem. You just want to drill a little pilot hole. You want to put a piece of tape on the bit, by the way, because you don't want to drill too deep. Hammer drill will go very fast into your concrete. So you want to put a little marking tape to mark how deep you need to go, which is the depth of the anchor that you're going to put into the concrete. And once you drill that hole, you just pop your anchors into the concrete, and then you can just screw the plate right to the floor. It's actually very simple. Once you drill the holes, the holes are the hardest part to drill, and getting them in the right position and positioning it on your front door. You know, well, some people are handy and they can do this kind of this kind of work themselves. You might have a relative or a friend or a neighbor or somebody that's kind of handy and they can help you. And if you can't, I would just encourage you to find, you know, a carpenter, a handyman, or somebody in town that can come in and help you with these devices. You know, if you buy all this equipment that we're going to go over today, often you can find somebody in your town that'll come in and just give you a bid to install all these devices in your home, you know, all in one shot. And that's what I do. As a consultant, at times what I'll do is I'll even find somebody for them, you know, wherever the town is they live or whatever the state, I'll do the interview, I'll make the calls, and I'll find the right person for them to call. That way they're already aware of what they're going to be installing, what they need to do. I'll even coach them on how to install it if I have to. And, you know, and then that way that person's ready, good to go when they go to the home. And I do that quite often. So that's kind of the front door, sir, is the upper and lower night lock. You know, that hardens your door. The other thing I recommend, again, it goes into budget, is I recommend installing a steel security door. Okay. Home centers sell these. You can buy a cheaper one for $100, $150. You can buy, you know, I've seen where you can spend $300 or $400 on these. But a steel security door is kind of like a screen door. It's a solid steel frame door. Often it has a mesh screen, like a screen door that's sort of obscure. You can't really see through it from the outside in, but when you're inside, you can see out. You know, a security door, a screen security door made out of steel has a lot of advantages. For one, it locks. And it also locks with a deadbolt and a regular lock. So in other words, it goes on top of your front door, and the criminal can't even see your locks. They can't even see anything on your front door. So it's another layer that they would have to work through before they can even get to the door of your house. And often when a criminal sees a steel security door over a front door, that's it. They're done with their front door. They look at it. They just said, forget it. There's no way I'm getting in this door. And they're going to have to go around the home and look for another way into the home because they're not getting in the front door. They don't have the tools. They don't have the equipment usually to do it. Yes, with cutting tools and certain things, they can be defeated. But you're going to be making a lot of noise. You're going to be bringing a lot of attention to yourself. Chances are, sir, when there's a steel security door, they're done. The other thing that's nice about a steel security door is when you can actually open your front door in the summertime, and you can keep your steel security door locked. So that way you have that steel security door as a screen door. So if anybody happened to come to your front door when you have the front door open, you still have that layer of security, and you're letting some breeze or you're letting a little bit of air in your house, but yet you have some security there. So your average person, there's just no way they're going to come and open it because you have a deadbolt lock on that screen door. So it serves multiple purposes. You know, some people don't like steel security doors. I'd like to point out that there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of patterns and styles. You can also, once those are installed, you can ask your carpenter to put some extra wood trim around the outskirts of that steel bar that goes all the way around. And he can actually cut what's called a rabbit joint in his material, and he can cover all that steel. So, and then paint it. So it almost looks like the door is built into the jamb. So that comes down to the quality of the carpenter that you hire to do that. But you can make it actually look really nice and make it part of your door, especially if you get a, you know, a decent one that has a pretty good design or whatever. And then I would encourage you to get a good deadbolt for that and, you know, upper and lower lock. And that's just another really good way. And if you do these things, and again, it doesn't cost that much. So the night lock is about, you know, $30, $40. The upper lock is about $25. Easy Armor is about $100. The Bully lock, about $150. The security screen is about $100. So you can see you're spending a little bit of money, but you're, you know, you're taking away the criminal's element. He's looking at your door psychologically. He knows he's not going to defeat it. He, you know, if he comes to case at your house and he's like, oh, geez, these guys got a steel security door. You know what I mean? He can see you got a quality lock on there. You know, he's just going to know that when he sees that on the home, he's going to know that this homeowner is taking precautions to keep people out. And he's going to think to himself, you know, they probably got this kind of stuff on their back door. They probably got really good locks all over the house. You know what? I probably should move on. And again, you want to put that psychological into his head that this is the wrong house and I better move on. Okay. And then moving on, sir, from the front door, you also want to install these devices on your rear door or any other door that you have in your home. If you have an entry door, just call it an entry door. I would advise you to install one of these on your garage door that goes into your home as well. You want to put the Easy Armor on there with the locks, the upper and lower locks. Some people have a door in their garage that opens the wrong way. What I mean is it opens into the garage. And that does that Easy Armor Concepts, makes a lock that actually is for a reverse door. If you need something like that, they do make one. It goes on the floor. It works a little bit different. It's just a completely different concept, but they do make devices if the door goes the other way, but I would encourage that. Now let's move to your back door. You have a back door that goes outside and it's glass. Well, I've seen people, they have cheap, thin glass rear doors. You know, you definitely want to throw a steel security door if you can over your back door that goes out to your backyard, because that's just that extra layer that screws into the studs of your home and protects your door. And they just can't simply kick it in or throw a rock through the glass. When you see that screen, that security steel screen door over your door, they're not getting in. It's just the way it is. If you have a patio door, like a sliding patio door, there's not much you can do. I'll move on to security screens here in a minute. But, you know, you just want to make sure you have a good lock. And Easy Armor makes an actual extra heavy-duty lock for sliding glass doors so they cannot be pried with a crowbar. Can't lift them out of the track. Once you have that device on there, you know, that's all she wrote. The only way they're getting in is if they take a hammer and smash that glass, which is what you want, because that makes a lot of noise. And criminals often are just going to say that makes too much noise. Everybody's going to hear this and they don't like to smash a lot of glass. And that's pretty much it. So just, you know, if you can lock down your doors and your perimeter doors with some of these devices, you basically eliminate 80-85% of the break-ins in your home. And, you know, you're doing quite a bit to send a message to that criminal to move on. So do you have any questions, sir, about that so far?
Oh, I think this is all very, very useful information, Danny. And if anyone has further questions, of course, they can raise them when we get to the call segment for the rest of the show. So I'm very glad you're doing this.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just really important, sir, because I read and I hear so many people get their homes broken into. And when I see how the criminals went in or I look at it, it's just, man, it really kind of breaks my heart, because I'm just thinking that one was so easy to prevent. You know what I mean? And even in my law enforcement days, I saw so easy how they have virtually no security. People think, you know, owning a gun or I'll call the police or whatever, that's not going to do any good. Okay, when a criminal gets into your house, the whole goal is to keep a criminal out of your house, okay, period. So keep them out. And if you can do that with some devices, so I'd like to move on, sir. The other thing you can do is they make these things called security screens, okay, security screens. And there's a few companies out there, and a security screen is, it's a steel, sometimes aluminum, but it's a steel frame that goes around your window. and you have to order them custom fit, and they screw into the wood studs right around your window or over the trim, and then they go in with a special screw that disappears that you can't back out with pliers or tools or whatever. It's a one-way screw. There's trim that covers them up, and they look really good. They don't look like bars. I've seen, like in Los Angeles, for instance, there's neighborhoods all over Los Angeles that have, you know, literally steel jail bars over the windows, and it looks terrible. And they've done that because, you know, they're worried about, you know, that it's a bad neighborhood in L.A. There's a lot of crime down in Los Angeles during the drug war time, and there's still drugs down there. People went with these steel bars all over the place. I think it's disgusting. The problem with steel bars also is if you ever had a fire in the house, you can't get out the window. They're a fire hazard. And I don't even understand how the city allows this, but they did. And you can't remove them. They're bolted in. There's no way. You're not getting out that window. If there's a fire and you need to get out that window, you're just out of luck. And I that's something I don't agree with. So when you have a security screen, what's really nice about it is they just look like screens, like a screen over the window. They're trimmed beautifully, and they make if you have an older window, they make your window look nice because they'll obscure it. You can't break them with a baseball bat. You cannot pry them. The only way you're getting through, and if you look at some of the videos on YouTube, you can see there's video of people shooting bullets through them, but they still can't open them. But they do have a latch on the inside that will flip open. So in other words, it kind of opens like a door with hinges if you need to egress during a fire or some kind of an emergency. Now, I'm a big proponent of that. Plus, they look good. They don't look like steel bars. You can simply just click the latch, clean your window, really simple, latch and close, and that's the end of it. So, but they do need to be professionally installed to make sure they get put on properly, and they need to be fitted to each window.
Danny, that's all excellent. I want to invite everyone, call in if you have any questions about what Danny and I have been addressing today. The number 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your call, get you on the air. 540-352-4452. And if you have any more information about the Oxford shooting, we're getting reports now about the parents being charged or even arrested. We'd be glad for you to share that with us on the air right after this break. We'll be back with Danny Cirrus. So stand by and call in. Mitchell will handle your call and we'll talk with you then.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Danny, Newsmax has just published a piece about the parents being charged in the Michigan school shooting, and they got a photograph here of the suspect who looks so different. Let me send you the link, Danny, so you can see what I'm talking about, because this is, in my opinion, rather strange. I'm going to put it in our chat, Danny, here, if I can figure out how to open it up.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet, sir. I saw the AP article, where the parents were supposedly charged with manslaughter, but I'm seeing the key words in there about, semi-automatic pistol. They seem to be driving that point home in the articles rather than saying handgun. They keep saying the word semi-automatic. We all know that they've been after any gun that's a semi-automatic
right.
for a long time. So I'm highly suspicious anytime they use those keywords.
Danny, look in the chat there and see if you got it. Do you have it there? Or I'll put it in Skype for you, too.
I would go ahead and Skype it, sir, if you can.
I will right now. It's similar to one you have there now, but different. Hey. Look at the photograph. Now, does that look like the same kid in the other photographs? I don't know. I find this very peculiar. Anyway, let me report. A prosecutor says the parents of a teen accused of killing four students at a Michigan high school were summoned a few hours earlier after a teacher found a drawing of a gun, a person bleeding, and the words, "Help me." This just sounds phony as hell. I'm just telling you, this sounds completely ridiculous. County Prosecutor Karen McDonald made the disclosure Friday as she filed involuntary manslaughter charges against Jennifer and James Crumbly, the parents of 15-year-old Ethan Crumbly. McDonald says the gun used in the shootings at Oxford High School was purchased by James Crumbly a week ago and given to the boy. Ethan was returned to his classroom and later emerged from the bathroom firing a gun at students. He's charged with murder and other charges. McDonald said Jennifer sent her son a text saying, "Ethan, don't do it."
That sounds completely ridiculous. County Prosecutor Karen McDonald made the disclosure Friday as she filed involuntary manslaughter charges against Jennifer and James Crumbly, the parents of 15-year-old Ethan Crumbly. McDonald says the gun used in the shootings at Oxford High School was purchased by James Crumbly a week ago and given to the boy. Ethan was returned to his classroom and later emerged from the bathroom firing a gun at students. He's charged with murder and other charges. McDonald said Jennifer sent her son a text saying, Ethan, don't do it. That sounds completely ridiculous.
I don't know why. I think maybe it's we got a caller on the line, and I don't know if we got that recycled because that was a repetition. Paul, join us. Join us, Paul. You got Danny and me here. Give us your thoughts. Have we lost the connection? Mitchell.
I'm still here, sir, if you can hear me.
I can hear you, Danny, but I can't hear Mitchell or Paul. Paul, are you back now?
I am now. For some weird reason, the call got dropped.
I don't know either. Mitchell couldn't explain it either. Go ahead, Paul. Go ahead.
So I really don't know much about this shooting you've been talking about. How many students apparently died?
Four, and seven others injured.
Yeah. You know, to be honest with you, I'm just going to go with my default position on all these things that have multiple victims. You know, the idea that a kid's going to go to school and maybe kill one person that he's really angry with or the main bully or maybe a couple, but this whole notion of, like four or more and then all kinds of others wounded, it just doesn't make any sense. A 15-year-old is probably not going to have the tactical presence to do such a deed. I'm going to reject it face value. I don't even know anything else about it. It just fits. It fits the pattern, doesn't it?
Yes, I think it does, yeah. Paul. And I think the timing is incredibly suspicious because they want to distract attention from Kenosha, Waukesha, and even the Aubrey finding in Georgia, where three white guys, rednecks, were convicted of murder. As I read the statutes in Georgia, that was an improper charge in the first place. It's clear it was, at best, I think, manslaughter. They didn't head out intending to kill him, and he sought to take away the weapon. There's an analogy here then to Kyle Rittenhouse with the Rosenbaum trying to take the weapon from him, where Kyle fired in self-defense. And then we have the report from Danny, they're blacking out the Facebook pages. That means we can't, you know, do any research on who the hell these people are. And Danny can't find any evidence of them having actually given birth to this child. Yeah. And I see this photograph of this new Newsmax article doesn't look at all like the boy we see in the other photographs that I've already shown. I find this very odd.
Right. I think we're done with it. I think it's far less interesting or less significant than the other three. And just quickly on the Arbery. Yeah. You know, after I've heard Danny and your thoughts last week, and, you know, again, I try not to dwell on too many of these things because, you know, just kind of just overwhelms you after a while, you know. But it sounds to me like it's a typical, I guess we could call it legal virtue signaling, if you will. But the whole aspect of them all three being charged and then all three convicted, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not buying it. I think it's kind of another one of these phony court proceedings that Miles Mathis essentially says. It's, you know, it's a show trial for TV. And as I mentioned before, we only get sketch artists for lots of other trials. And I'm sure that plenty of people would be interested in the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, and we're not getting any television coverage of that.
Yes, that's one that ought to be 24/7. I mean, this was so grotesque, where she was soliciting these young girls in order for the elites and the powerful to rape them, in essence. I mean, you know, what do you call it? Statutory, but most of these girls really had no idea what they were getting into. They were seduced by claims they'd become models, they'd meet famous, wealthy men, blah, 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 blah. And Ghislaine was a facilitator, the procurer for Jeffrey Epstein, the pimp. I mean, it's just grotesque. And the American people need to understand that this is what Bill Clinton and a host of other shady elites are up to. They like to take advantage of young children under certain circumstances in the expectation they're going to go scot-free. Just disgusting. Danny, would you like to comment on any of what we're hearing here from Paul?
Well, you know, sir, we talked about it. There's always these suspicious things. I mean, you know, when we look at all these false flags, you know, especially when it has to an adult, how many times do we find out the adult doesn't exist? They weren't born, like in case of the Gilroy shooter, no such person, you know, no records anywhere, no vehicle, no, you know, that just doesn't happen in the United States. We live in an electronic world. Everybody has an electronic trail. The one person that does not is a minor when they're underage. And that's what's very troubling. It almost seems like they're catching on, that we catch them every single time, and now they're going to start to resort to minors committing these crimes. You know, what Paul said tactically is true. You know, the mindset of a child to take a firearm and actually take somebody's life is, I don't see it, sir. It'd be very difficult. A lot of adults, I like to point out, psychologically involved in a shooting, you know, they go into shock when they actually have to fire a gun at somebody and they see the, you know, somebody fall down or they see the carnage or whatever. You know, several police officers all over the country, they get involved in the shooting. It's quite common to find the police officer after the shooting hyperventilating or even pumping, which I've seen before because of the stress when they get involved in an incident like that. And I just don't see a child like this because somebody bullied him walking through a hallway and using a handgun and just, you know, wiping people out. What's the motive of the kids that he shot? Were they part of the bullying? You know, can we hear from them? I, you know, we can't see any of this aftermath in the hospital. There's no interviewing of the kids. How come we can't see the kids in the hospital? How come we can't see the teacher that was wounded? Let's see the wounds. Let's see them in the hospital. Let's see some of the doctors talking about, you know, what kind of wounds they had and that sort of thing. We're not seeing any of that aftermath, sir. I believe this is a completely 100% false flag, just used to clog the news cycle. I think they were expecting maybe something to come on the news. They needed to change the subject, possibly, as you said, so they sensationalize it. We also see the sensationalized photographs of students bundled together on, you know, the different kinds of photographs. When we see those high-quality photographs on the campus like that of these shootings, it makes me wonder, how was a cameraman there at that time so quickly? You know what I mean? There's shootings all over every day in Chicago. And we don't get these kind of photographs. Why are we getting them with these high-profile cases all of a sudden, you know, when they drive it home? Anytime we see it on CNN, MSNBC, or any of the mainstream news, you know, and they keep driving the story, they keep talking about the firearm over and over again, you know, that's suggestive programming. Those are the ones that are the fake ones. But I can tell you the real ones are happening in these inner cities on a daily basis. Again, several people die every single weekend in Chicago, you know, in some kind of a gun battle. And we just don't hear about it. You know, they don't cover it. I was just reading a story the other day outside of Philly, in a town maybe 45 minutes outside of Philly, where a kid got mad, 19 years old, at a Thanksgiving dinner, got mad, pulled out a handgun outside that he had in his car and fired at somebody. And the bullet went down the street and through a window and killed somebody that was sitting in their house having Thanksgiving dinner, just an innocent bystander, and had nothing to do with it. You know, where's the outrage over this? Where's the outrage over this kid? How come we can't see his photograph all over the place? Partially is because he's black. I looked into it, and they don't want to talk about it. But in the meantime, this should have been all over the news about this kid with a troubled background, been arrested several times. Where did he get the gun? You know, there's no talk about that. How come we're not seeing his parents? And how did he get possession of that firearm, you know, with his criminal background? How come we're not seeing all the things that actually happened? How come we're not interviewing the family of the guy that was killed when the bullet came through the window? You know, we don't get to see any of that stuff. You know why? They don't care. That's not a narrative that they want to push. They want to push a narrative that a white kid that looks, you know, wholesome with those glasses that we're seeing in that photo takes a handgun and went to school. That's a narrative that they want to push in that area. And to me, sir, it just doesn't add up, not Danny, even for a second.
Danny, what would be an appropriate charge to bring against the parents in a case like this, I mean, with a kid, you know, as you drew the nice parallel, what if he took the car, you know, went out, ran someone over? Are you going to charge the parents because he took the keys and took the car and ran someone over? Well, would there be, I'm sure there's an appropriate charge here somehow about carelessness with handguns or whatnot.
Yeah. I think some kind of negligence. Yeah.
Yeah. Danny, do you know offhand what would be an appropriate charge?
I don't know what the laws are in Michigan, sir, but I was reading an AP and they said there are no laws for securing handguns or anything like that.
That cannot be true.
Come up with manslaughter. In reality, sir, that's not going to stick. There's no way to charge parents with manslaughter based on the actions of their 15-year-old kid. If the 15-year-old
Danny,
kid,
Paul, I'm going to bring you. Go ahead, Danny. Finish, Danny.
If you got it from a friend or another person's house, or whatever, you know, there's no way to charge the parents for the actions of their son when he leaves the house. You know, I some kind of negligence, I would think, but I really just don't see it. There's no laws in the book. They clearly said in Michigan there isn't. You know, I tell everybody, sir, you know, if you have the money and you own guns, period, you know, if you're considering buying a gun for the first time, okay, but you're a budget-minded person, and I understand that, but if you can't afford a safe, you know, the number one thing we tell people is if you can't afford some kind of a locking device or safe, you can't afford to own a handgun. Simple as that. There are accessories that come along with owning handguns, okay?
Yeah.
You know, shooting glasses, some things you need to buy, some safety equipment. Every gun you buy, sir, comes with a basic lock. It's a little cable lock that you run through the barrel, and you run it through the action, and, you know, it has a little on there. It's a cheap little device. Damn. It doesn't cost much, but it's really simple, and it just totally renders that gun inoperable. Even if somebody steals it, they're going to have to use some kind of cable cutters or device to make that gun. They make what's called a trigger lock. They're $12 each, maybe $15. It's like a little master lock that goes through the on each side of the handgun, and it locks up the trigger, so you just can't even use the action.
Yeah, Paul. On the gun. Let me bring back Paul. Go ahead, Paul.
I was just having a little chuckle here because once our friend Danny gets going here, if I had him on the witness stand and I was cross examining, I'd say, okay, just answer the question I ask you. but I was going to say, I'm sure that you've seen a criminal code book or two and you know how sick they are. So I am highly certain that there's some sort of law against providing a minor a firearm. And, you know, there's something that occurs, there's going to be a negligence charge of some sort. I haven't looked it up, but I'm certain of it. But yeah, I think he made a great point about the students, you know, huddling and all that. These are all stage scenes for psychological value. But I want to go back to Waukesha, because I don't think we're done with that. I don't know if you guys are done with it.
You know, go ahead, Bob.
I'm not done with
it. Go ahead, Paul.
I just want to know, you know, before I mention the one thing that I cannot leave, I want to hear what you guys have to say about it. But the one thing I cannot leave is that photo. It's part of the video where it shows the SUV driving away from the band, which it would have had to gone through, and the band, the marching band, is still in the street, all in, you know, kind of formation with a distance apart from each member that you would expect, as if they were undisturbed. And he would have had to have driven through them at, say, 30, 40 miles an hour. He would have drove through them mere seconds ago. But there they
are. Well, you better. Why don't you send me that so I can look at it? Because I have what looks like a completely legitimate. Well, then I'll have to go back and find it, because I have what looks completely legitimate of driving through the band and the bumps of driving over people. Now, hang on, Paul.
Hang on.
Paul. I do believe the subsequent footage that shows a bunch of bystanders, you know, hovering over bodies, that appears to me to be completely staged. You don't have any EMTs on the scene. You don't have a string of ambulances. We find that in Boston. We find that at Sandy Hook. We find that in Orlando. The actual real emergency responders won't let themselves get tied up with a staged event because there may be a bona fide medical emergency to which they must respond. I've had, by the way, I'm doing a false flag and conspiracies conference 2021 on the 11th and the 12th, and included will be a presentation of mine about a story, you know, a tale of two cities, Kenosha and Waukesha, and it will be followed by four persons discussing whether it's real or fake: Giuseppe Vaffangulo, David Scorpio, Russ Winter, and Daryl, all four of them. So we're going to have a pretty thorough scrutiny of this as a continuation of the discussion. So it's not going away, Paul. If you sent me footage that I have somehow missed, I'll track it down. I'll take a look, Paul, because I'm all for exposing the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I'm not eager for any of us to be played. It seems to me the politics of this are so wrong and so devastating to the Democrat agenda that this is not one they could possibly fake. But go ahead, Paul.
Okay, but see, that's got to be thrown out the window. In other words, if we're just going to look at the evidence, and I'm sure Danny can agree with this, being in law enforcement, we have to look at the evidence. Forget about the politics, because we might not be thinking or seeing what it is they do.
I agree with that. Okay. Right? That's what I do. Okay. That's why I do bring together groups of experts, and I'm doing it again here. And I want everyone to know. I'll be announcing more, but you might want to set aside time on the 11th and the 12th, Saturday and Sunday, a week from this weekend. It's really shaping up wonderfully. I'm going to have about 24 presentations that'll be broadcast on those 2 days, all for free. It'll be broadcast free. So I just want everyone to know, and then it will be archived on my blog, no doubt. Yeah, Danny first, then back to Paul. Well, Danny.
Okay, what's it done?
Danny.
Yeah, well, you know, sir, that thing that you're going to be hosting is very interesting, for sure. I'm looking forward to listening to what others have to say. But if we're talking about the Waukesha thing, you know, we broke down, sir, some of the video in there. And some of it just doesn't make sense. You know, he's speeding down the street, then he gets to that other section where he hits the brakes. There's just a lot of things missing. That section where he's driving over the crowd, to me, looks a little bit CGI, because we don't see any of the bodies doing what they should be doing when they actually get run over by a car. We actually see people getting up after the car actually goes over the top of them. You know, we don't see anybody bouncing off the fenders. We don't see anybody going over the top of the car, off to the side, or anything. And Russ Winter's blog post that he put together really kind of shows some videos that really show what it looks like when somebody gets run over by a car.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've looked at all that Russian footage, yeah. But you also have people hit by cars who get right back up, Danny. I mean, there are quite a few examples of that in that footage. Now, Russ is a participant in this, and he and Giuseppe Scorpio and Daryl will be given their evaluation based upon further consideration, which I will be broadcasting. I mean, that's part of the show, because we want to expose the frauds, and I'm open to, you know, being shown to be wrong. I mean, that I don't claim infallibility. Okay. Paul, you're pretty convinced that, yeah, I want you back on. Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
Okay, thanks, because I just wanted to finish to say what it is you're going to see, what I saw, okay, which is, there's zero doubt about it. If it's part of that 40-minute video I sent you, I could find out which minute it is, and you could just go right to it, and you could see it. The vehicle, the SUV, is driving away from the van, from the band. The band is still in the street, okay? It would have had to drive through them mere seconds ago, and then it drives in between these two people on the street, in between them. And the people in the street, the vehicle just drove between them speeding. They take no notice of it at all. They don't turn their heads. There's no body language of avoidance, right? There's no startled look on their face. It's as if the vehicle never drove in between them. And the reason is it did not. It's been inserted, like the planes were inserted on 9/11. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you can go all the way back to JFK because you got all the spectators on Elm Street who not responded to Jack and Jackie. And that's because that footage, the foreground footage, was taken when only the pilot car was driving by, not Jack and Jackie. So they were using their sophisticated techniques of optical printing and special effects to create a film many Americans continue to this day to believe is authentic, where to my astonishment, Oliver Stone seems still not to know whether it's real or not, suggesting the debate will go on. Well, it's been settled decisively. John P. Costella did a tutorial you can find on my assassinationscience.com and on our co-edited assassinationresearch.com. But also check it out, because I've embedded it in my JFK special, which I dedicate to Oliver Stone, by the way. You can find on my BitChute channel, Jim Fatzer. Just scroll down to 18 November. This is one I think every American needs to know. I've sent it to Oliver Stone, because what I'm learning about his reprise is that it's pretty feeble, doesn't make much advance compared to what we actually know. And I think that was a result of a psyop to steer him away from the best results, the cutting-edge stuff on what happened to JFK. Paul will continue to pursue it. If you want to send me an email just telling me what minute to look at or even the video, again, I will look for it. Danny, I want you to have a chance here to say a final word or two as we close.
Well, sir, I appreciate you letting me talk about the security thing for sure. I mean, again, I can't tell you how many break-ins I see, you know, in the political climate that we live in that's getting worse. You know, I encourage everybody to take some kind of action to secure their home, get a really good quality alarm. I use Simply Safe, maybe even consider putting a fence around their property or a perimeter to keep people off of their property to where they have to come in a gate or something to keep them out. So they can't even case your house in the first place. Put up some surveillance cameras to add to it. And there's much more. Someday we'll cover some more stuff. But you know what? You really do need to secure your home. That's your, you know, your sanctuary. And you need to keep the criminals out. There's no doubt about it.
We
have just too much crime. If there is, it can strike anywhere. And if you just take some simple precautions, harden your front door, use the lock lights on your bike, you're just going to keep criminals out of your house.
Okay. Thanks, Danny. Thanks, Paul. Thanks to all of you. Have a wonderful weekend. Spend as much time as you can with your family and loved ones, because, frankly, we do not know how much time we have left. Thanks for joining us today. Back Monday with more of the Raw Deal.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The perfect triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the perfect triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict.